150. Here we go. Howdy, everybody. Portal Gaming Podcast. This podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. And for more information, you can log on to www.theportalct.com. You can find us on Facebook, The Portal, or on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. Portal Game Podcast, also a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Howdy, everybody. I am your host, The Brant, for this episode number 150, entitled Run, Luke, Run. And I gave it that title because that's how I have felt. I know we're under this quarantine and, all the pandemic and everything going on, but I've felt very busy running to and fro. We finally got the portal open. We had shut down for, I think it ended up being 8 weeks. And we just did a lot of work. And so actually that's why I didn't end up making a podcast last week, because that's when we were opening the store. And I think I did a 14-hour day, like 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. the day before the store opened. So we remodeled everything. It looks really good. We've got front-facing games. We've got a huge miniature section. We've got space for a used game section that we're still kind of working on. Of course, the store's open. It's retail only. No playing. It's masks. But hey, it's open, which is great. And if you are in the area, it's curbside pickup as well. If you still don't want to come in the store, that is totally fine too. So, yeah, that's what's been going on. You can actually hear right now, I am outside. It is a pretty beautiful morning. I want to say it's a beautiful morning, but it is rather cloudy. But the fact that I can sit outside in the AM in Connecticut is awesome. Not that we normally can't in May and even April, but just thought I would record from outside. So I'm sure you hear plenty of birds around me, which I think is kind of a nice ambiance for an episode. So, so this episode, actually, I'm going to, like the title, Run, Luke, Run. I'm going to run, Brant, run through a bunch of games that I've been playing during the quarantine, just kind of give you some quicker hit reviews in terms of those and where they're at. So that's kind of the plan for this episode. Okay. I think that's majority of what you need to know before we jump in. Like I said, really just going to make this a review episode. It's been interesting, actually, because we've sat down a few times to record and then switched over to playing. Like the other day, Brian and Kathy and I sat down. We're like, let's record an episode. We mapped out the episode, and then Rachel came home, and we wanted to play Aeon's End Legacy. And I'm never going to push recording an episode on people, so we dropped the episode, we played Aeon's End Legacy, and so hopefully we'll get a chance to review that. We're five games in, I want to say, and I think there's seven, so we should finish that up and then hopefully get you a review. A bunch of other reviews that have come in, like High Rise, Tang Gardens, Liberation of Reapburg, so all these are coming in future reviews, which I would like to get with Kathy, so we'll see on a bunch of those. Okay, let's run through. So the first game I want to talk about, I actually got to play this recently with Brian's son. I played Castle Panic, and I hadn't played that in a while. Now, I didn't play with the expansions. There's like the Wizard's Tower and the Dark. I don't know. There's a second expansion. I just played the base game, and boy, was it really fun. I mean, again, playing with a five-year-old, so I want to play at that level. But, you know, Castle Panic's just a really cool co-op castle defense game. Now, it's a little, I guess it's a little older in the co-op world, like Legendary is what I think of, because it has like a winner, but there we were not doing the winner. It was just, let's try to win and work together. So that was kind of that. But if you haven't played Castle Panic, it's really simple. You just have a bunch of cards, and it's like, oh, I've got the blue archer. My goodness, a lot of loud trucks going by at this time. Sorry about that, people. Okay. A blue archer and a red archer and a green swordsman, and they can hit different rings around the castle, and enemies are just flooding in. Now, your goal is to get rid of all the tokens in the bag, so there's 49 enemy tiles, and they come in, and you've got, basically, you've got goblins, orcs, and trolls that have different 1, 2, and 3 hit points, respectively, and each time you play a card, you hit them once, and then they're going to kind of move closer, and you're going to draw new tokens. But where the game is really fun is you've got, like, walls that will block people and deal a damage to enemies, so you can kind of plan around that. And then there's a whole bunch of special tiles in the bag. So there's like enemy bosses that come out that will change up things. There's like a giant boulder that will randomly roll across the board and destroy things, including your own wall sections. It was a lot of fun. I actually want to read those expansions and play those in terms of that. So I really enjoyed Castle Panic. It made me look up Star Trek Panic, too, because I want to try that one. All right, next up in playing with the kids, got to play Llama. So Llama was a Spiel nom last year, and it's a really light card game, think Uno. So in Llama, you've got to shed all the cards in your hand. You're trying to get rid of all your cards. And there's just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 Llama. And you play cards in that order. So if there's a 1 on the table, I can play a 2. I could also play a 1. If there's a 6, I could play a 6, but I could also play a Llama. And then Llamas wrap around a 1. At any point, you can withdraw, and you're going to score the cards in your hand, and you don't want points. So if I have a 4 and a 3, I'm going to score 7 points. But the trick is, if I double up a card, I don't score again. So if I have a 4, a 3, and a 3, I still only score 7 points. Llamas are 10 points, no matter how many you have. And the first person to go out gets to actually get rid of a point token. Now, there are 1s and there are 10s. So obviously, if you have 10 points, you'll get rid of your 10-point token. Otherwise, you'll get rid of 1 point, and other players will score points. As soon as somebody scores 40 points, the game's over, and the person with the least amount of points wins. It's not very good. It's okay. I mean, it was fun to play with kids. They enjoyed it. They liked the llamas. They liked the colors. And I don't want to take any of that away, but there's really nothing. Withdrawing was never really worth it because somebody's going to go out and get 0 points. So it's only, oh, I should withdraw now rather than draw more. Oh, I didn't mention that. If you can't play a card, you draw a card. I didn't really find it enjoyable. Again, the kids like the colors. They like the llamas. It's enjoyable. But at the end of the day, they're racking up points and then going, oh, why am I losing? It wasn't very fun. So I would play it if the kids really wanted to, but I would definitely push them towards something else. We've actually been enjoying Fuji Flush a whole bunch, the Friedman Freese game, and the kids really like that one, and I like that one too. So that's where I would go with a small box card game. So that's Llama, published by Amigo, and designed by Dr. Reiner Knizia. Next up is Silver River. So Silver River is from Robert Burke Games. And this is a 4X that claims to be under 2 hours. It is under 2 hours. And it's a big, sprawling 4X game. Now, the biggest thing you're going to notice when you open this box is that the production is kind of low. So from what I understand, they did a Kickstarter and they funded, but it didn't allow them to do stretch goals or something. So you've got these weird plastic discs that are your ships, and it's cubes, and everything's there, but it's kind of bland. But I heard the game was really good, so I wanted to try it out. So I got a chance to play this 3-player, and it did take us less than 2 hours, which was nice. So what's happening in this game? So it is a 4-round 4X game. It ends at the end of 4 rounds. Whoever has the most points wins. So what you're going to do in a round is you're going to gather resources. So every population cube that you have on a planet will produce 1 resource for you. So you start with 5 population cubes on your home planet. Let's say it's round 3. You might have explored 4 or 5 other planets, had several populations cube on them. So you're starting to get like 12, 13, 15 resources. So you take these resources and then you divide them out amongst political, military, tech, and I apologize, I can't remember the fourth one. Civilization. So you everybody puts a player shield up, and then you assign these tokens. Once everybody's set, you show your tokens, then you go around. Now, on a turn, you could take a single action, or you could drain a whole area. So the civilization action, for example, is where you you would place new population cubes out on planets. So you start with like, ooh, this population is going to cost 3 cubes to place 1 population on a planet. But it may upgrade from there after that. So with the technology, you could buy a technology that says, hey, make it so it costs 2 cubes to put a population out, and things like that. So you could be on a bunch of planets, and kind of in one action, you could populate all of them. Or you could just do 1 single action and kind of delay the end of your turn. It's kind of up to you. Military allows you to move. You're moving to planets. You're exploring them. When you go into somebody's sector, you can choose to fight. They can choose to fight. And then fighting is dice rolls. there's these D6s that have circles, stars, and squares on them. And then you have like a firing chart, again, that you can upgrade with technology to make your to hit chance better. But you can also just be peaceful. You can settle planets. In fact, some of the goals are, you know, settling planets and cohabitating on them. So you want to be with other people. So it's interesting on that front. And then the interesting part is you can pass your turn. When you pass your turn, you get a victory point, or you get like you get to move up on this little track where you collect various resource cubes. And then every time it would be your turn, you get to move up again. And so you're progressing a lot on that. So if people really delay out the turn, you get a lot of resources and move way up on these tracks where you're going to score victory points at the end of the game. There's a political phase where you can, like, buy tactics cards and you can call a vote for three different powers, like three different titles in the game that give you some small things like trade leader and grand leader and spy master and stuff like that. So everybody just kind of does like a blind bid, and the losers get their cubes back and stuff like that. So then there's a monster in the center that you can go slay. You can work as a team to make it easier, or you can fight individually to get victory points and bonuses. Yeah, there's a lot because it's a 4X game. Obviously, you have player powers. You have player powers, and the various player powers give you special abilities and things. Mine was I could explore more. Oh, I didn't mention exploring. When you go to a blank sector, you can explore it, and then you draw these cards, and random events happen, and you could shuffle things into the like quest deck or have a quest that you have to go on. You get to kind of make choices, which is interesting. Yeah, and then it plays out over four rounds, and you score for various things at the end of the game. There are a lot of really good elements. As I'm recalling the game, I know I'm kind of going quickly, as I said I would, through these. But the whole package overall just wasn't enough to entice us. A 4X game in 2 hours is awesome. It's a great idea. It was fun. Each individual thing was neat, like drawing and explore. And then getting three choices was fun, or possibly having a quest that gets shuffled in was neat. The politics was kind of a cool element. The fact that you could cohabitate. I think where the game falls down is that those player powers were not very interesting. So the races didn't really feel all that unique. It was too minor in structure. Oh, this one can copy a technology. This one gets to explore one extra. This one gets plus one in a vote. Like, it was just, they were very basic. They weren't really interesting. Whereas something like Twilight Imperium, you have four or five player powers for each race, which makes it really interesting. Let's see, what else? The scoring was just kind of weird, and that at the end of the game, you want to have all these extra cubes to score bonus points. You're trying to be up on those tracks. Fighting monsters didn't really seem worth the victory points, and the bonus for our monster wasn't very good, so it was hard to entice that. But probably the biggest issue is that you have the same tech cards. Everybody has the same tech cards, and so you just kind of you just pick a path, and you're just upgrading that technology. And then there are these... And then... this is actually an interesting point. At the start of the game, you have 10 goals, and you pick 5 of those goals, and that's how you're going to score victory points. But 10 wasn't enough. 10 made it, 10 pick 5 made it so that in 3 players, we picked almost all the same as some other player, and I think between 3 of us, we had like 2 or 3 of the same goals. And so they just weren't, there weren't enough there. It feel like they needed to be varied, or the goals needed to be attached to the races, I think would have been a lot more interesting. To give us things to do. It felt like those goals just weren't varied enough. And then there are common goals that are out on the board, and they were just weird in terms of, like, win a battle against a player who has less ships than you and more ships than you. And we just had a weird situation where somebody had to explore the same space as somebody else, so they went in and fought a battle and then lost the battle, but they had more ships. So that gave that person just like 4 or 5 victory points for just somebody having to get... It was weird. And so there just wasn't enough variety in all that, I think, was the lack in the game. So when I think of like a 4X game like this that's going to be under 2 hours, I totally would go to Heroes of Land, Air, and Sea. And there's so much variety and so many races and so many different things. And the play is ultra smooth, even smoother than this game. So unfortunately, I think Silver River is a pass for me. But I would look past the production if you really like space 4X games. That would be my one caveat, is that look past the production. There is more to the game, but overall, I didn't find the whole package satisfying. I feel like it needed more variety, even though there's a lot there and a lot of creative elements. Wasn't quite high on the list for me. Next up is Claim. So Claim is Deepwater Games, and it's Scott Alms, and it's a little two-player trick-taking game. And so Fox in the Forest is one that Kath and I really like, so we got a chance to sit down and play Claim. So what happens in Claim? So Claim plays out over two phases. So the first phase, there's 52 cards in the deck, so each player gets 13 cards, and there's different races, like goblins and knights and doppelgangers and undead and dwarves. And I feel like there's another one that I can't think of. And so it's a basic trick taker where one player plays a card and then the other player has to follow suit. Or if they don't have that suit, they can play a different suit. And then whoever played that suit wins, or the lower card. Sorry, the higher card wins in the suit. So, but the trick is you're not always trying to win. That's what they kind of do in these two-player trick-taking games, I noticed. So you flip over a card from the deck, and whoever wins that trick is going to win that card, and the loser is going to get a face-down card. So if it's a really low, like a zero goblin, you may not want to win that card. You may want to win a higher card, so you're going to try to lose the trick so you can get the random card off the top of the deck. As you collect those cards over the 13 tricks, you put them in a pile for phase two, where you will play again. It kind of reminds me of Biblios, where you like have two different phases to the game. And then in addition, each race has like a special ability. So for example, the undead are, if you win a trick with the undead, you immediately put them in your score pile. So that in phase two, when you're playing again, every trick you win just goes to a score pile. And then you're just counting how many cards you have of each race, and whoever has a majority will win. I think there's five different. I thought there was six, but I think there's five different, so that if you win three out of the five. And so whoever has majority has, yeah, a majority of each race's cards at the end will win the game. So that's kind of the idea of what you're trying to do, and like I said, those tricks. So the doppelganger, the race, my brain is going too fast. The doppelganger race is like a wild suit. You could play them anytime, kind of like Trump, and you could trump in to win the various tricks, so they can be in place of anything else. They always count as that suit. And the goblins lose automatically to the knights if you play the knights second, so they're just really low and cheap. And then the dwarves, whoever loses the trick in the second phase gets the cards, so that's kind of the idea there. There's also a Claim 2. I have some promos that I haven't played with. But we actually have played this a decent number of times, like four or five times. So it was kind of interesting on that front. It's a pretty fun little trick-taking game. I mean, compare it to Fox in the Forest, which I feel like I remember being better than this game, but they're so different. I mean, they're both trick-takers, but, you know, this one is really, like, in those powers and abilities that you're doing. Whereas Fox in the Forest is more like the cleverness of playing the cards and controlling your hand and the other player. So feel different, but really like Claim. Really fun. It's very pocket size, so you can travel with it. So definitely a plus from us. And hopefully we'll get a chance to play Claim 2 and maybe talk about that one as well. So that's Claim from Scott Alms and Deepwater Games. Next up is Chocolate Factory. Chocolate Factory is from Alley Cat Games, and it is Matt Dunstan and Brett J. Gilbert, who designed Elysium, which is a game that I absolutely adore, and so wanted a chance to play Chocolate Factory. So I did play Chocolate Factory. So this is happening over 7 days. You're trying to package chocolate and sell it either to local shops or to department stores and complete various orders. So how do you do that? So in a round, you're going to draft. You're going to draft a new component for your factory that could upgrade chocolate and you're going to draft a person. You're going to hire a person who will help you for that day. So once you do that draft between the players, then you get to pick what items you're going to take. Let that truck go by. And then after that, you are going to run your factory, which you do simultaneously. So you get three chances. You put a piece of chocolate on your conveyor belt. You push it through. You've got a four-length conveyor belt with space for machines on each side. So what are you doing? Basically, you're upgrading your chocolate. So seeds turn into chocolate chunks. Chunks can turn into fingers or bars. Then you could add nuts or candies to those, and then you can box them, make box chocolates. That's kind of the five levels of upgrading, and various places want different things. So fancy department stores want the box chocolate, and local stores just want the chunks or the fingers. Fingers would be like a Kit Kat bar, think like that, in case it sounds kind of weird. And you're doing this by using the coal you have each round. So it's like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 coal. And then you push forward one space, you manipulate what you want, wipe everything, and then push forward another space, and you do that 3 times in a day. You have 3 8-hour shifts, I guess, if you're running 24 hours. We'll be nice to our workers and say 3 6-hour shifts. You're running 18 hours a day so that they can rest. That sounds horrible. You have 3 different shifts, people, right? So it's a really clever puzzle. In the end, we played a 2-player game. The draft wasn't interesting, and you're trying the large department stores, you're trying to sell to them to get majority so that you can score a whole bunch of points. But if you tie, the first person gets the points and the second person doesn't. It was a very cutthroat tiebreaker. So all in all, it was very close. Brian beat me like, let's just say 120 to 117. I mean, it was very close. But it just felt kind of weird with 2. So I need to play it with 3 or 4. However, I did play the solo. The solo was awesome. It is a solo mode where there are no points. You have certain amount of goals and objectives you need to complete, orders you need to fulfill that week, and you either do it or you don't. And it was very hard to figure out. You're still drafting, you're still doing all that. But I really liked the solo mode was do it or don't, not just can you score X number of points. I don't mind a solo game where you score X number of points. It makes sense in something, especially if there's a score to compare to or something like that. It's like in an Isle of Cats where you compare to your sister's score. I think that's reasonable and fun, but it's really neat when they figure out a way to just say, can you win or can you not? So suddenly it feels like a little adventure game of the adventure of can I complete all these orders in a week? You know, if we really became a popular store, popular factory, how would we do this? So that's why I took the chance to review this without playing 3 and 4 player. I think 2 players just not really going to be the best where this game is at because that draft wasn't interesting and all that head-to-head just kind of made it weird in terms of all that. It might be fine with 3 and 4 when you can, you know, work against several players to get various points and they can be fighting out other things. But I really, really enjoyed the solo mode. I want to get that back to the table and do it again. It was definitely clever. You know, doesn't live up to what Elysium is, I don't think, but I mean, that's not really fair to do to designers. But it was a really neat game, definitely fit the theme well. It was fun to pick all the powers and abilities, so that is Chocolate Factory, Alley Cat Games. Okay, next up is Adrenaline. Adrenaline, I got a chance to play. I had actually played this, Paul Grogan demoed this to me at Gen Con, let's say 2016 when it came out. And I really enjoyed it, but when I saw Tony, who works at CGE at PAX Unplugged, he said, oh, let me send you a copy and send you Adrenaline and send you the DLC pack and get you to play all that stuff. And so I did. I played the solo mode that CGE put up kind of during the quarantine here, and that was pretty fun. It was very, very puzzly. So it's definitely a puzzle instead of a shooter. And then I've gotten a chance to play this 3-player game and a team game. And it's just a really smooth game. So, I mean, it's an area control game where you're trying to shoot the targets that are moving all around. Once somebody dies, you have little, like, blood tokens on them, and whoever has the most blood tokens will score points. And then they'll get the most points, and then the second most, third most, etc., etc. But then you put a little skull on your token, and now you're worth less points each round. So it kind of works out that way. It's really fun. You're just picking up all these weapons. There's a really great mechanism where when you pick up a weapon, it's basically preloaded, so you don't have to worry about loading it. And then once you fire it, you put the card back in your hand, and then you can pay to reload at the end of the round. You just get a couple actions. The expansion adds player powers, which I think is I think it's very good. I would say it's very important. I mean, it's hard for me to say, but I feel like by the time you're going to pick up Adrenaline, you just pick up the DLC pack. You're probably already interested in this. It adds the 3v3 mode where you can play three players versus three players because there's a sixth character in the box, which is a really interesting element to it. All in all, I think Adrenaline's a really great game. I did notice when I tried to play it with Zephyr and Kathy, they just have no interest in a first-person shooting game, which is what this is. And so that theme just didn't draw them in terms of wanting to play, and it was hard to get through it. But as soon as people were down with it, they really liked the game. Really fun. So that is Adrenaline with the DLC pack from CGE. And last up is Inner Compass. So Inner Compass is a game from AEG, and it's all about getting in tune with your inner emotional well-being. So it's essentially an abstract game where you have a board of various colors, and the colors represent emotions, anger and sadness and fear and joy and love, things like this. And so on your turn, it's a little convoluted, but basically you can move a direction. You can move one of the compass directions. There is an opportunity to kind of slide around amongst the color you're in if there's multiple adjacent spaces, but we'll kind of move past that for here. So you move one of the compass directions, and then you have options. At that point, you could either pick up a card that's in that compass direction. So you shuffle the deck and you put a card north, south, east, and west of the deck. And whatever direction you move, you pick up the card that's there face up. So there's kind of like four cards to pick from. If that card matches the color of the space you move to, you get a bonus card off of the deck. The other option is you could build in that spot. The other option is you can move again. Now, whatever spot you end up in, then you could discard cards to build, to, like, get in tune with that spot. And so you have a board with, like, 15 tiles on it of your color, but on different colored spaces that match those emotions. And you could pick up one of those blocks and you can build it. You can kind of build a foundation on that emotion by discarding X number of cards. And all the tokens are kind of lined up on this scoreboard, and they'll tell you, like, oh, white needs three cards. So you discard three white cards, you could build that block, and you score points. So the top block might be worth 6, and then 5, and then 3, and then 2, and then 1 for all the others. But then when you score that, you move it to the bottom and slide all the others up. So you change their point values in terms of that. So you're trying to build this array of blocks to score those points and kind of be able to do that is the idea. As you unlock your board, you'll get to unlock end game bonuses, which are basically where you get your abstract, like, unity, and you want to have all of your tokens next to each other, or you want to build your tokens in the corners, or whatever it is, of the main board, and you'll score additional points. So you have little like head-shaped tokens that you put out there to say these are going to be my endgame bonus points. Once you get to a third endgame bonus, you collect 3 points, and everybody gets one more turn, the game's over, and you score. And you build off of those. I think it's really neat. I've played it with, I think, 4 different people now, and 2 people really didn't like it. The 2-player game was very quick. So when I played with Kathy, I know she wasn't a big fan because it was very fast that we played. But I played a 3-player game, and that went a little bit better, although one of the players got a little... just didn't enjoy it as much. But I thought it was pretty neat. I don't think it's one of those games that's going to last forever. Or be around in a while, but it was definitely fun to sit down and play. And if I saw it, I want to say if I saw it at a convention, I'd sit down and play it, but that's not happening this year. Huh? But that is that. That is Inner Compass from AEG. I thought it was all in all pretty fun. I definitely played it again. It was not too long, maybe. All right, everybody, that is that for this episode. Kind of a shorter one, but I ran through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games for you.